The following is a presentation of the Black Hollywood Live Network, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment, Hollywood Redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is Black Hollywood Live, Phenomenal Women, featuring in-depth interviews with today's most inspiring women. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood Redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host of Black Hollywood Live, Phenomenal Women.
Slow song, but I'll take it because we're still phenomenal women, whether we have a fast song or a slow song. And I'm Tara Johnston here on yet another edition of Black Hollywood Live, Phenomenal Women. Ashita Andre couldn't be here tonight. She's out on assignment, but she left me with you, and I'm sure we'll have a good time even still. So let's send her good vibes, and we'll see her the next time we're all together. Tonight we have a special guest who I'm totally excited about. I think she's my new BFF. Let me just be honest with you. Like, we've been going on and on, so hopefully you can join into the conversation. You will probably recognize her from the 2013 critically acclaimed movie Fruitvale Station. You'll definitely know her as a cast regular on TNT's smash show The Last Ship. But by the time this interview is over, you will love her as much as we do. That's right. We have with us tonight the talented and beautiful Christina Elmore.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here.
I know, we are totally BFF.
Right,
though,
like, we've been outside talking, exchanging pictures.
It's, I mean, like, it's already done.
It's like the full love fest that's going on, seriously.
I've pretty much decided.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, good.
So we're just going to add everybody else into this love fest. Yeah. So, The Last Ship, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Coming back for its second season.
Yes, June 21st.
June 21st comes on Sunday night.
Sunday night's 9 p.m.
We'll plug that often. Make sure you watch that. And I will say, I started watching this show, and I was almost late for the interview today because I wanted to finish episode 10, the season finale, because I'm just like, what? If you're not watching this show, you should be. Want to let you know it.
Indeed.
Right. Watch all of it and catch it when it comes back for season 2. But let me ask you, L.A. native.
Yes, L.A.
How is L.A. different now that you're in this, you know, industry, as we like to say, industry?
Definitely. I mean, I grew up in L.A. in a way that you can grow up in any town in America. It was like, I went to a church with my family. We had a village of people who loved us and cared. And Hollywood was there. And, like, I knew people who were involved, but it wasn't a big part of my life. So now coming back here 3 years ago to do this kind of thing, I'm like, oh, I see now what people complain about L.A. Like, before, people were like, oh, I don't like L.A. I'm like, what is not to love? It's amazing. And I'm like, oh, I could see how you might not like certain things. You know, there's some superficiality. There's a lot of traffic. There's smog.
There's some things.
Those are some things.
There's some
but
things.
But it is beautiful.
It is beautiful.
You have the ocean. You have the mountains. You have the city life. It's great.
And you have your family. You grew up with a minister father.
Yes.
And
I'm a
musician
mommy.
Mother.
Yes.
And that's kind of a different mix.
Yeah. It's also because my dad was an actor and a dancer before he turned psychologist minister. So, like, I feel like he's lived 9 lives. And my mom is a musician. So, yeah, they met. At church. He was preaching. She was playing the piano. I mean,
praise the Lord.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
You know? And was that different? I mean, it's kind of different to have those kind of parents, and they encouraged you to do both the arts and education.
Yeah. It was. And so what I love about them is that they were not interested in me being like a child star. They weren't interested in getting a job out of this. Because, like, I feel like when you're a child, your mother and father,
oh, yeah,
they're
totally
the real MVPs. So, no, they were not interested in that. But they totally encouraged me to pursue whatever I wanted to pursue. And knew going into college that they would be paying for it and that the degree I would be getting would not be the thing I would be going into as my career.
They knew that.
They knew that.
How did they know that?
Because I knew going in that I was going to be an actor. And I knew going in that I wanted to have a legitimate sort of liberal arts college experience and not do the conservatory thing for undergrad. And so we knew both things going in, and they were still down. So,
and you chose, of all schools, just to go and get this liberal arts education, Harvard University?
They chose me. I didn't choose.
I mean, yeah. That little institution.
It was great. It was really fun. It was. I met my bestest friends. experienced some very cold weather and had great classes.
Experienced some very cold.
Some very, very cold weather.
And did you walk around Harvard going, okay, this is fantastic. I'm getting this African-American
studies in my studies, major, yeah.
But I don't want to do, I'm not going to use this.
But it wasn't
this.
Like, it's not like, it's not like that doesn't inform who I am now. So, like, the things that I learned are things that will go with me in life. A lot of people I know who went to school don't go and get, then I did finance and then I went into finance. They did psychology and then they found their way curating art museums. Like, you know what I mean? You mm-hmm. find your way. And so I learned how to learn there. So I use that every day.
You definitely use that every day. Yeah. So you get this degree and then you knew off the bat you were going to go to the American Conservatory.
I knew I was going to go to grad school for acting and that's where I would do my actor training. I didn't know where I would go. I just applied to the top five and went with where I felt more comfortable and where I got the most scholarship money.
Hello. Can we speak about the dollars?
Keeping it real, real. Well,
gotta keep it real.
Student loans are real.
ask me, I know every month. Okay. So when you got there, what did you think? I mean, there are tons of actors and actresses who are like, this is too much. This is more than I thought it was going to be. I'm getting this master's degree. I can't predict my future. Like, what were you thinking as you were attending school?
All of those things. Mm-hmm. All of those things that this is the hardest thing I've ever done. We were going to school 6 days a week, 13 hours a day, and our class had 8 people in it. So it's much like your family. You love them and you hate them all at once. It was really intense. There were times where I was like, why am I doing this? Why didn't I just go back to LA? Why didn't I move to New York and just start working? Mm-hmm. But I'm glad I didn't because I feel like I'm a better actor because of it.
Okay.
And it was tough, but now I can handle grueling TV schedules, so it's fine.
There's a lesson in everything.
There's a lesson in it all.
And you never aspired to be anything else. Like, you know, as a kid, oh, I'll be a doctor, a lawyer.
No, of course I did. Yeah, of course I did. But I knew that acting was... I didn't always know that I could do it as my job. So I knew I saw people on TV, but I was like, oh, that's the TV people. Like, I can't actually do that in my job. And when I realized in high school by doing like a theater program that, oh, wait, I could do this as my job. I could do it on stage. I could do it on TV. I could do it in film. And this is a real job. Why would I do anything else? This is the only thing.
I love it.
That's the best.
And growing up, who were your mentors and or people who you looked up to, actors or actresses that you looked up to? Like you saw them on television and go, oh, my gosh, I want to be like that person.
When I was in fifth grade, we wrote letters to ourselves that our then fifth grade teacher, when we graduated from high school, sent back to us.
Really?
Yeah, and it was really cool. I got my letter.
That's very cool.
And in it, I wrote, I want to be Felicia Rashad when I grow up, and I want to go to Harvard, and I want to, something else I want to do. I want to go to Juilliard, too. And I got the letter, and I was like, this is my plan. I'll do that. But Felicia Rashad, she did that sort of iconic role.
Right.
But then also, she continues to do things that change the game. She directs so much now. Mm-hmm. She's still just a fabulous actress. Yeah, it doesn't get any better than that.
Mm-mm. So, you finish school, decide to come back to L.A.
Yes.
And L.A.'s where you're going to start your career. Never thought about going straight to New York and doing the theater thing?
I thought about it for sure. But New York is cold. It really came down to quality of life.
Like, you gotta speak the truth. You gotta speak the truth.
Yeah, New York is cold. New York, I feel like when I'm in New York, when I live there one day, I want to be very rich. Because I feel like as a rich person in New York...
It's a different New York.
I
lived there for years. It's a different New York when you have coins.
Have a driver. Just get around. Because those are the things... I love New York, but the things I hate are the walking down the street and you feel like I have to have armor on to get around. Mm-hmm. And the subway is dirty. It's a great method of transportation. I wish we had it here, but it's dirty. But I like that I can get in my car and go to Trader Joe's in L.A. And like that it's perpetually sunny.
Oh, listen to this L.A. native talk.
I mean, I had to come back. And I have a village here. I have people I love and know. And this job is really hard. Like, there's a lot of rejection. There's a lot of insecurity and not knowing what's coming next. And it was nice to know that I was coming back to people I knew would be there no matter what.
Do you attribute having your family close as the thing that's helped you continue on this path?
Yeah, my parents actually don't live close to me, but they live in Sacramento now. But having my godparents, who I love, who I lived with when I first got here, and having so many aunties and uncles and people who are adopted blood makes it possible. Makes it so that I live a regular life. And I don't get caught up in the Hollywood, what am I doing, who's seeing me, why am I not, will I get, da, 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 da. but then I go home to my regular family.
It keeps you centered.
Yes.
So very. What did your regular family say when you got the role in Fruitvale Station?
So that happened. That was strange. It happened while I was still at ACT.
Okay.
They were doing the local, it's a very small role, but they were doing the local casting.
Very small, but memorable. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I almost didn't do it because the casting director, when they did the local casting, she wouldn't let me read the script. And so all I knew is the character was going to have to kiss a girl on a train. And I didn't want it to be one of those roles where it's just, I'm kissing for the male right. gaze, just mm-hmm. to see these two women go at it. And I wanted it to have something to do with the story. I wanted it to progress the story and make sense. And I was like, well, if I can't read it, I don't know that that's true, so I'm not going to do it. And Ryan Coogler, the director, called me, and he was like, no, I'll tell you about it. I'll send you the pages of the script. You should do it. He was like a 26-year-old guy from Richmond making this film. And I was like, well, if he's down, I'm down.
Yeah.
And I'm so, it's a beautiful film.
It's
I'm
a fantastic so film. And yeah. your role is exactly what you said. It's a pivotal part of the story.
Yeah, and it moves the story further without just being salacious for the right. sake of, you know.
We watched some of the scenes last night. I was like, oh my gosh, that's yeah. really fantastic. Like, it was a really integral part to the story.
Well, great.
Yeah. What did it feel like being like, once the movie was released, mm-hmm. And it was that story of a 26-year-old guy who's directing this yeah. story. It's such a powerful story. Thinking about everything that's happening now.
Yes. I knew that it was such an important story to tell then, but it's gotten even more mm-hmm. so important now. This moment that we're in with sort of, we're in a very interesting moment.
Yeah, between, right now in time.
Yeah, with people of color and communities of color and the police who protect and serve. And this story of this young man, it sort of transcends him and transcends Oakland and transcends that one moment. And so I'm really grateful to have been a part of it.
Did his yeah. family ever come to the set when you were there? And
not when I was there, but I think they were really hugely involved. Yeah. So what was great about it, the reason that it feels so true and feels so close to home is that they were a big part of it.
Right. It was yeah. such a moving, great film. And that was your first.
That was my first time with the camera. I was like, wait, so where do I, who, look?
Well, you pulled it off very well.
Thank you.
Were you uncomfortable at all kissing another woman?
I had been in plays before, but that was part of it. So okay. that wasn't the issue. I just wanted there to be a reason that we were doing mm-hmm. it. If I was kissing a guy, I would still want there to be a reason.
Right.
So yeah, that was, she was a great, nice girl. So it worked out.
Yeah, nice girl.
Yeah, she was lovely. Yeah, we all had breath mints, so it was great. It's fine. But no, that part wasn't the uncomfortable thing. And it turned out it wasn't an uncomfortable thing. So
right. I mean, it looked yeah. very natural. I mean, like, you guys were having a great time.
The smoking of the Black and Mild was the hardest part. I don't smoke anything. And so I was trying to, like, understand how you hold it. And I was coughing so much. We were on a hot, real BART train but inside of, like, a warehouse. So it was just, and it was in the middle of July with no air conditioning and 100 people on the train. So it was just very hot. A lot of smoke. So that was the hard part.
I know it wasn't hard working with Michael B. Jordan, though.
No.
Not at all, right? Not,
it's that's the easiest part.
Is that not easy?
Oh, easy on the eyes, on the mind.
How about that?
He is just one handsome fella.
Is he now?
Yeah.
You heard it here. I mean, you have an open invitation to come visit anytime you like.
Yes, I am married now, but we could still be friends.
She's married. I'm not. Check the Twitter account.
True.
I'm sure he was, I mean, and not just handsome.
Not just handsome. Very talented.
Very talented.
And totally became the role. And there was so much truth in it. So, yeah. He was brilliant.
It was a fantastic movie. So, you are in this Fruitvale Station, which was critically acclaimed, won numerous awards.
Yes.
And did you think a post-apocalyptic naval ship was going to be next?
I didn't know. I thought whatever was next was going to be a couple years later. I thought that I was going to get to L.A. because Fruitvale was before I'd even moved here. So mm-hmm. I thought I would get to L.A. And then, you know, I started working at a restaurant. I was tutoring kids. I just figured it was going to take a lot longer to sort of
get it moving.
And a month after moving here, I had that audition.
And is it true you almost missed the audition?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I was 2 hours late. My car broke all the way down. Like, I was all prepared.
Not half down, no, like all the way down.
So on the day I had been told my, so I'd been, I got into LA, been here for a month, been auditioning for a lot of things that I wasn't right for, but just to meet casting directors. So I was auditioning for things that 45-year-old Asian women would end up playing, but it was so that I could meet people and just get myself going. And so the day before Last Ship's audition, my manager called and was like, okay, so you have an audition for a stage regular. It's not going to happen, but it's great to meet this casting director. She's really great. She casts a lot of things. And they weren't being mean. They were saying, clearly, you haven't even guest starred or co-starred. Right. You're not going to go regular. But it's a great opportunity to not mess it up. And then so they'll call you back in for other things when you are ready for regular. I was like, okay, great. So I wanted to be really prepared. I was like working on myself, warming up. And I was going to go really early and then like go to a Starbucks and like right. focus myself mm-hmm. and then go into the audition. So I go to my car and I'm looking for my keys. I can't find them anywhere. I go outside and I realize my keys are in the ignition and have been for hours. No. And so my battery is not just, it doesn't need to be jumped. It needs to be replaced.
Wait, how did you even, how did that even happen?
I don't know. These things happen to me all. I feel like I have called AAA more times in my life than anybody in the last 3 years than anybody does in their whole lifetime. I feel like I have them on speed dial.
They're like, it's CE on the
They're
phone.
They're like, oh yeah, Christina, we'll be right there. So this happens to me. So that wasn't the crazy part. The craziest part that I needed it to be replaced and that I was now then 2 hours late to the audition, sweaty, a mess. I still went, even though they hadn't said come. I didn't even know they were still holding the auditions. I go in, I'm stressed out, I'm all nervous. And the casting director, Denise Chamian, who's lovely, I get into the room and I thought she must know I'm late. Of course she knows. She had no idea. But I'm so nervous. And she's like, Christina, you have something to prove. And I thought she was talking to me. Like, Christina, you're late. Right. You have something to prove. You don't know. Who are you? She's talking about the character. Alicia has something to prove. And she did. And so I think that really, that energy helped the audition.
Right.
Because the circumstance of the audition was very similar to the circumstance I was in at the moment, under a lot of pressure.
And do you feel that... okay, so the description of The Last Ship, if people out there don't know, it's... The Last Ship takes place after a global viral pandemic, wipes out over 80% of the planet's population. The crew of a lone, unaffected U.S. naval guided missile destroyer, the USS Nathan James, faces their toughest mission yet, to find a cure to stop the virus and save humanity. What?
So it's like a light romp.
Yeah, it's like nothing. It's like a nice
it's a
comedy.
Really funny show.
Yeah, it's real comedy. Yeah, nothing, you know, really light.
Mm-hmm. So the world's not ending or anything.
What did you think? I mean, how does it feel on set? Because you guys, I mean, you start the show, you've been underwater for 4 months.
Yeah.
All this stuff has happened.
Yes.
You don't know. You come up and you're like, oh, mission's over, we're going home.
And we're not going home.
And you're not going home.
Because the world is dying and there is no home.
And you have no idea if your family's okay.
None.
You have no idea what's going on. Food's getting short. Water's getting short. You don't know who's out there trying to get the virus.
Get the cure, who's trying to manipulate the situation for their own gain. And yes, our show sort of takes a very extreme view of what would happen when you're out at sea for so long.
Right.
And then you come back and you have no way to get in touch with family. But my brother was in the Navy, and his life, even in a normal circumstance of the Navy, you're out on a ship, you're out to sea for 4 to 6 months,
mm-hmm.
and you can't call home. And you don't. A lot of times we didn't know where he was because that was classified as to where the ship was and its location. And so, yes, our show, there's a lot going on, the whole world's dying. But there's so many men and women in the armed forces who every day are like feeling that kind of pressure of you don't know what's going on with your families. You don't know what's going on with the people back at home. And you're sort of isolated doing this job that's super important and super hard.
But you are isolated with some of the, like, most talented
people. Yeah, so ours is
people.
Different. I'm not actually. I go on a set every day.
But, I mean, Eric Dane. The captain of this ship.
Holding it down.
Mick Steamy. I've been told he will have his clothes on in every episode, so I should get that image out of my mind.
I think maybe you see a little bit, but it's not... He doesn't bring as much steam as he was able to bring to Grey's Anatomy. He's still fine, but... There's not as much steam because this is a different character.
But even in that character, I mean, he's playing a fantastic, like, he's holding down the ship. Like, he's commanding. Yeah, he's not playing. You have Alec Baldwin who's on there
with
you.
Who's fantastic.
Absolutely fantastic.
I mean, this genre is made for him. I feel like
that
sort of
that
action.
Face that he has, right.
Yeah. action, apocalyptic, what's going to... That's his wheelhouse, so he's great.
And it starts with executive producer Michael Bay.
So we know that there's going to be big explosions.
It's like big explosions. Bang, bang. It feels like a million or you know, like multi-million dollar like movie, action movie every
episode.
That's
what's great about it, the show. It does. It feels like, and it is like a movie in that we are shooting so much. There's so many moving parts to our show. And because it's my first TV thing, I thought this was abnormal. I was like, oh, yeah, it's normal to be here 18 hours and not to know what your schedule is because we had to work on the Navy ship and they're actually out to sea so we can't go on the ship. And and I was like, oh, this is normal. And then I talked to other people. I'm like, no, Christina, this is not normal. This is the craziest thing I've ever done. But in the best way. We're making a movie every week.
And on the set, everyone gets along. It's not like this feeling of pressure like it...
No, that's the best part. Like, so what's scripted is very sort of filled with pressure and very hard and scary, but working with these people is the best. Yeah.
And it was revealed that your mom on the show is being played by Alfre Woodard.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, come on.
A dream come true.
I mean, come on.
I would have been happy just to have met her in passing. I would have been like, okay... Now I can die and be
right,
happy.
Right, me too.
But to work with her, it's crazy. And the way they told me about it, I was like, they were mean. But so the executive producers, our showrunners, come downstairs. We're on set. We're shooting. They're like, Christina, during a break, I need to talk to you. And I'm like, oh, okay. And they're like, yeah, it's really important. And so I was like, okay, I'm fired. It's episode 6. That's fine. I made it this far. It was really great. It was a great learning experience. I got to meet a lot of people, but they're going to kill me next week. And it's fine. I'm not upset.
It is a virus. People do die.
I was like, yeah, somebody's got to die. Why not me? And so I was like, okay, just prepare myself. I was going to call my mom. Like, okay, how do I tell her? You know, it was short lived. And so they bring me over and they're like, Christina, it's super important that you know that, Alfre Woodard's going to play your mom. And I was like, what? It was the best.
I've like jumped up and down.
No, I did. And I was like, wait, really? Wait. And I hadn't even read the episode yet. So I was like, I have a mom.
I know. That was the greatest thing. It was like, this woman comes on and given everything that's happened, she really is like the head person in charge.
She's basically the president
at
this point.
She's basically the president. She talks to the captain and she's like, oh yes, my daughter happens to be on your ship.
And it's like, oh, and she may have had something to do with why I'm on the ship.
Right.
And then it gets crazy.
And you're like, Mom.
I'm like, Mommy?
This is the greatest thing ever.
I haven't seen a face that I knew and familiar in months. Mommy?
Is there anything you can tell us about the second season coming up?
I can tell you that we pick up where we left off in season one, not knowing what's our ship is sort of taken over by her command, and we don't know what's going to happen and how we're going to fight her, because Mommy turns out to be kind of evil.
Aw, that's not possible.
Okay. But then, so we start there, season two, and we have a new enemy, and we don't know how we're going to face it. And so not only do we have a new enemy, but she's my mom. So that's pretty...
This sounds very Scandal-ish.
It does.
Almost,
it does,
right?
With Mama Pope, a little bit.
How about this?
Yeah. That's true. You know, I hadn't even thought about that. It's very true. Our show takes a different turn, so I can't say... But I don't know if I can say much more than that we'll start there, and that... The idea of who's immune, so who's sick, who's healthy, and then there's maybe some people who are immune to the virus, and what will that mean?
Mm.
And if you were immune, what kind of power could you wield?
Dun, 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 dun. Now, your character, Junior Lieutenant Officer Alicia Granderson, was revealed in the pilot, is a lesbian.
Yes.
Spoke about a girlfriend that she left back home.
Yeah.
Have you received a lot of support from the LGBT community? Have you...
Yeah, I mean, it's been lovely. Last year after when we aired the first episode and that sort of came out, there was a lot of like sort of lesbian and LGBT blogs and things that were excited about that. And what I really like about it is that I am a character who's a lieutenant. I'm also a woman. I'm also a lesbian. I'm also a friend. I'm also a fighter.
Right.
And it's not the defining thing
right.
of who I am. Just like my heterosexuality is not the defining thing of who I am. It's a part of who I am. And it's something that now... with sort of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I can talk about on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't make me any less, any more or less of a lieutenant.
Right.
So that's what's great. And the writing, we don't go all into anybody's real personal
right.
lives.
It's about what's
happening right now. So That happens to be my personal life. I left a girlfriend at home. Some people left husbands. Some people have left kids and cats. So yeah,
I think it's fantastic and so timely, as you were saying about the don't ask, don't tell, that it's just really showing the openness, or at least
what we hope the openness, because I don't think it's super easy to go up to your commanding officer and then talk about any partner, whether that be a boyfriend, girlfriend, or otherwise. But that my character's able to do that is pretty cool.
Yeah, I like how it's just a part of a sentence. She said it was like big deal.
It wasn't like a thing. It wasn't like he was like, oh, hold on,
right?
What?
Like when Ellen DeGeneres came out on her show, it was like dun dun. It wasn't like that. It was like, oh yeah.
And now 20 years later, we can have gay characters on TV, and that be a part of who they are as a character, not who they are.
Who they are?
Yeah.
Right. It's and your character, like being a communications officer in this show, really is holding it down. I was really so impressed with that. I mean, there's supposed to be, 218
people
on this ship. And there you are, one of the few women of color that I've seen on this ship.
Definitely one of the few women, and certainly one of the few women of color.
Few women of color, and you're there as the communications officer holding it down. I'm impressed.
Well, thank you. I try. I love it when there's lines in the script where people have to call me ma'am. I always get so excited. I'm like, yes, you will call me ma'am. Thank you. Yeah, I am a ma'am. I feel very ma'am-like when I'm in that uniform.
But besides all the work you do in front of the screen, you're doing some things behind the scenes in order to put together an all-natural hair care line.
It's skin care and hair care.
Look at that.
A vegan, all-natural apothecary line that my business partner, who's also an actress, amazing Ashley Blaine Featherson, who people probably know from Hello Cupid and all kinds of amazing stuff that she does. We both are really into making our own products for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I've just gotten so over going into Target, going into Walgreens, and seeing the latest product that has a beautiful sort of flashy bottle. I saw a commercial for it. I'll use this. And not only is it usually ineffective or just the same as whatever they were selling before, it's also, I've been realizing, it's filled with so many toxic ingredients.
Yeah, totally.
And I'm like, I'm now eat much better. I try not to eat things that are filled with all those toxins. Why am I putting them on my skin?
Your largest organ on your skin.
Right. And we absorb 60% of what we put on.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been making my own things for my own family. And over Christmas, I was like, maybe I could, I wonder if I could sell, And then my good friend Ashley, she was also saying the same thing. We both made each other as Christmas gifts body products.
Really?
And then we were like, this is something. I think this is something. So it's called Blaine Lorraine. We launched in July with 6 products. We're super excited about it. We plan to keep adding on into the summer and fall and seeing where we go.
And the name.
Blaine Lorraine. And you can find it at BlaineLorraine.com.
Oh, nice.
And we're on Twitter at Blaine Lorraine. We're on Instagram at Blaine Lorraine. And we're coming for you.
What's the go-to every staple product that you have in the line?
I'm really excited about, we have this thing called Wonder Eye Serum. And what's great about it is that it's great for sort of bags and puffiness and fighting off wrinkles and moisturizing this very sensitive part of our skin. But also, if you use it at nighttime and you put it near your brows and lashes, it can encourage them to grow and be thicker as well. So it's like my favorite thing because it's magic in a bottle.
I totally am loving hearing about all of them. I'm sad that there's no samples right here next to me.
And
it's
wanted to bring them. We want it to be so perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So I was telling you earlier, actually, I have in my car at this moment 35 pounds of coconut oil.
I hope her car doesn't get like
stones. That'd be really upsetting. But we're using sort of really high quality, natural, a lot of organic ingredients, and we're working on packaging that looks like that really sort of tells you who we are as a brand. So we want it to be perfect. And I didn't want to bring in here that thing that was like a ratchet sample. I wanted it to be nice. I didn't want it to be like, oh, and then I wrote on it with the Sharpie Wonder Eye Serum. No, no, no. You'll see it when it's ready.
In July.
Very soon.
Online, we'll be able to get it online.
It'll be online, and then we'll see about local area in LA boutiques and other stockists.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, super excited about it.
Well, I love the fact that you are here. You're talking talented actress, beautiful entrepreneur, smart, LA native. What don't you do?
I don't play any instruments. I don't know.
And fantastic wife. You were married.
All year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I feel like I'm not allowed to be a newlywed anymore. I feel like after a year, I don't know. I was going to be like, yeah, we're newlywed. And then I was like, no, it's been a whole year.
keep that fire alive. You can be a newlywed as long as you like.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, he's the best, so it's great.
Love it. Best hubby. We love to hear that around here. He is. You and hubby come back anytime you like. Thank you. Especially in July when you have those products.
Yes. I'll bring you some. I'll bring you the whole line. It'll be great.
Yeah, that'll be fantastic. Thank you so much for being
here.
Thank
you for having me.
We really appreciate it. I'm Tara Johnson. This is another fantastic episode of Black Hollywood Lives, Phenomenal Women. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at TJ Wagging Her Tail. You can also check me out at WordsWineWomen.com, a new show that I'm also on. And where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at Tina Loren, on Instagram, Christina.Elmore, and on your TV screen on The Last Ship, June 21st.
Set your DVRs. Don't miss it. I'll be watching. I'll be tweeting.
Yay,
I love to live tweet doing shows. Thank you so much for being here. Continue to be inspired, and we hope to be inspiration to you. We'll see you next time.
From producers Maria Menounos, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire BHL crew, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I'm your BHL announcer, Scipio. Instagram me at Planet Scipio. Thank you for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.